to begin, would you say that you have something like a practice, or would you say
no,
that you have
No, I don't have a practice. I think that, okay, so Women on Wave started 10 years ago, and I think when we started it, I think the strategies and the way of thinking about people's ability and about control and has changed dramatically. So I think that where we're at now, or at least where I'm at now, is that, and I think that has is something that Women on Waves has been doing all along, is that it's really much more about engaging with groups and individuals in a way that they feel empowered, and that they that other people start taking responsibility and doing things. So it's a do-it-yourself culture. That's what it has become, and so that, but that means breaking down power structures and breaking down comfortability zones of, for example, when you talk about medical abortion, which is like the domain of the medical professionals, the idea that women do it themselves is like something that a lot of people are opposed to, because it takes away, first of all, the medical control, it stalls all these ideas about danger, about people not being capable of making decisions for themselves, which is, I think, something that I learned. Everything which is happening in our society is basically something you can bring back to this. Do you respect and trust other people to make decisions about their lives and themselves? And that is, I think, something where this is a large part of our society has become. The mentality or the strategy that they've taken on is that you have to protect people against themselves. And whether it's about decisions on unwanted pregnancy, whether it's on euthanasia, whether it's on drugs, whether it's on even voting behavior or freedom of expression or all these things. So I find it extremely fascinating to find, to continuously looking for ways in which you can, and that has again had an effect on how people view themselves. Like here in the US, people go to the doctor for everything, like for the smallest little thing, because they got afraid of the idea that they could think for themselves about whether it might be serious or not. Or so this authority which has been delegated, whether it's with lawyers, whether it's with doctors, whether it's with politicians, the authority to decide for us has fundamentally is now so fundamentally ingrained in our culture, and I think that change, to work in that field, is what we're doing.
And how do you facilitate this transformation? Is it something that happens like immediately overnight? Is it a gradual process?
Well, I think actually it's a lot. I think there's a lot of people there that are very that are looking for this, but there's not much out there that is facilitating it or giving the tools to do it. So, for example, for me or for Women on Waves, and Women on Web, it's really about finding, especially youth groups, actually, very young activist kids that are used to be like the only form of empowerment that they know now is demonstrations or what else do you have? So the idea that you can actually kind of do of subversive activities in order to change, so that is what Women on Waves does when it's training and working with local women's groups. It's also giving them the trust and the knowledge so that they can actually do it. For example, one of the things that we've been doing over the last few years, and this is not at all about the ship. I think the ship is about it as well, but in a different way. Because what the ship does, the ship's campaign, it's suddenly giving a voice to the local groups that are never heard before. Because you have, when you have talking about the abortion debate, for example, it's always like the older, well-established feminists or doctors that might have a voice in the media that everybody calls the same people. And then suddenly there's these young women's youth groups that have organized the campaign for the ship locally, and then they're suddenly the spokespersons in the press and they have a presence and a voice, and then and the women that need abortions suddenly get a voice, which is never heard before as well. So the ship is a way, is also a strategy to achieve that. And so that empowers them also, like we give them media training about, you know, how do you deal with the press and how do you... So there's a lot of information, training, education. And then also just let them do it and just, you know... And with the hotlines... The hotlines is what we've done in South America and in Pakistan and in Indonesia and some other places, where we train youth groups how they can give women information about a pill that women can use themselves to induce an abortion. And the pill is available in all the pharmacies. It's called misoprostol. But nobody knows about it because that's the knowledge gap. Like, doctors know, but they won't share it with anybody because they protect their knowledge, because it's a way of power, about income, about also not having... Sometimes they don't even think about that they can tell that to women. So we are breaking through that barrier of knowledge, and we say, okay, this is how you do it. This is how simple it is. This is how safe it is. And you can share that information with others. And we train them. We teach them how to talk in the phone to the women, because they have to be... You know, they shouldn't break any laws, because that's one of the things that... And I think there's a lot of things that you... I mean, I think that the point where we are at now is how can we expand it to other domains? Like, I think we've been really very effective and we are still in abortion. And we've slowly starting to expand it to other domains. So how can people take charge of their own lives again and do the things that they need to do to protect their lives, or to get access to the things that they need? Or
so, do you mean by expanding, you also mean how can you scale it up?
No, the scaling up is that happened through the hotlines and the internet. Like, Women on Web is sending medicines to women in countries where abortion is illegal, so that the women take the pill at home, and then they have their... And then there's the help desk that is helping women. I think with expanding is more like we started including heavy bleeding after giving birth, which is one of the main causes of deaths under women in the developing world. And that can easily be prevented by taking 3 tablets under the tongue immediately after giving birth. Again, that's the same medicine, misoprostol. And so I'm now looking at, you know, other possibilities, mostly within health, but or within rights, or yeah.
And am I correct that you trained in part as an artist many years ago? Do you have a kind of an artist? An artist background.
Yeah, yeah. I went to art school. Yeah, I'm a trained artist.
And I'm
a writer, and I'm. I've had a long background of things in my life.
And not to be reductive about it, but do you think of Women on Waves as related in part to that that earlier?
But Women on Waves wouldn't have happened without my art background, because it has made, I think, in a sense, I think it's the transdisciplinary thing which is making it such an effective and feasible project. And so also we did some creative fundraising with it. For example, the first funding we got was from a Dutch art foundation who helped funding the clinic that was designed by Van Lieshout. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways in which art has played a role in that. And I think that, but I think also the transdisciplinary part of it is anyway very important. It's about the sea, which is a male world. It's about NGOs, organizations, women's groups. It's about human rights. It's about law. It's about medicine. It's about internet, media. You know, it's like... It taps on and draws in all these different domains and disciplines.
And how do you define your role, I guess? I mean, is it a work? It's not a work in the artistic sense. It's not an NGO in the typical trajectory either. Like, how do you, in that way that one always is asked to do, how do you describe...
My role? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it's it's hard to say. I mean,
because it's changed, because your role is changing, or because you
No, yeah, my role changed over the last 5 years. I mean, I started it, I worked mostly alone, at least in North, and then it, and now there's a lot of other people involved that are much more like on the organizational managerial. I think that my interest, for me personally, also to stay, is I am very good at finding loopholes. I used to say I'm very interested in making the impossible possible. Because in essence, Women on Waves was an impossible project. And Women on Web was as well. Like, all the lawyers I talked to said that it was not possible. So, but then when you ask the right questions, like, okay, that is not possible. But if you would do it this way, would it be possible? Yeah, well, yeah. You know, it's not quite legal, but it's not illegal as well. Well, it's not, if it's not illegal, then we can do it. So, and I really enjoy finding these spaces within, yeah, and so, yeah, I think that's my role, and my role is to make it happen, and then but it can, I mean, but it's it, but in a more modest way, because it cannot happen without a gynecologist saying, yeah, great idea, I'm going to help you. Or a captain that says, okay, I'll come and I won't charge you anything. Like, it's all the volunteers that are not paid, but that find it important and they see the importance of it. So it's a form of... it's about organization, but it's not me organizing it. It's also the topic. It's a topic that a lot of people feel is very important. It's the autonomy, self-determination. These issues are very close to some people's. So the lawyers work for free. The ship's crew works for free. The gynecologist works for free. I mean, there's so many things that make something like that possible.
Do you identify as an activist, or would that not be the problem?
I don't know. Well, I think it's the problem with these kind of words is, what does it mean? What do you mean? Activist means to act, right? Well, yes, I'm somebody who acts upon something that I find or discover or see, or a problem that I identify. But it's not the only thing I do. I reflect. I research. I think so there's, but that's part perhaps of activism. So and I think also this mentality of like the people that are involved with Women on Waves and Women on Web, and there's really a lot of them, and they're all over the world and they're working together. So I think one of the strengths of this organization as well is that it's very flat. There's no hierarchy. Everybody takes on their responsibility in their tasks. And that is also why they keep engaged, because they don't feel that anybody is telling them what to do. They're just all working together to make something possible and to support women in the world and to do something to help other people. And I think... I am always... Like, always when we have these meetings, when all the people that are working... And sometimes, you know, once a year or once, twice a year, we fly also people in, because it's very important sometimes. I'm always very moved to see how dedicated they are, and then they start their own research, because, like, for example, with Women on Web, there have been a lot of problems and things, you know, there's a lot of obstacles. And with Women on Waves as well, there's a lot of obstacles, and you constantly have to push, go further. And that energy that is so much in all the whole community that has been built up around the world now. And I mean, the amazing, the young kids that we work with, like in South America and in Pakistan and Indonesia, it's so amazingly moving, and it gives such hope that the courage that they have to just defy all these cultural norms, and that they believe that something is important, and that the moment you can hand them the tool, because I think that's what we do, we just hand them a tool, and that they felt they needed the tool to start, you know, to start building
and
it and working on
knowledge.
It. The tool is strategy and knowledge. The tool is the strategy, like the hotlines or the access to the knowledge about the pills. But that is the tool. The tool is perhaps also just making people understand that it's not a doctor that needs to do it. That we can. That anybody. And so. And that is so. Yeah, to hand that tool over and to see what happens with it and what is built out of it is, I don't know, that's incredible. It really is, yeah.
And the ship, what is the role? I mean, in a way, you're
the ship is a catalyzer. Okay, so the ship has the ship does that too. It also is a tool, but because it's the ship is only going to countries on the invitation of local organizations. So it's a moment around which these groups organize and mobilize, and this organization and mobilization. And also by making them visible for the press, because they are the spokespersons locally and they are the ones that do it, and they have to connect with all the other organizations because it's a huge project. So it catalyzes this moment and all this attention and of the press through which you can create a kind of shift in public opinion, for example. That's what the ship does. It's much more a tool to address public opinion, public awareness. That is something different than the tool that I spoke about that is more about groups, individuals that want to change the world, that want to do something, that want to change their own realities and the realities of other people. The ship is about changing public opinion, public awareness, and sometimes that leads to change, like in Portugal, where abortion was legalized as a result of the campaign. In other countries, like in Poland, there is this change in public awareness. There is a push for a legal change, but the Socialist Party is too afraid to put it for vote in the parliament. There's all these other political realities start. There's a lot of other political. So the ship can create a catalyzing moment, but there's all these other political realities that are starting to play in it. And like any political change or any society change, that is more from top down, where you change things from top down. The trainings, the hotlines, the website is about building a structure from bottom up. So there are different approaches, yeah.
Somewhat different question. How do you negotiate cultural difference?
Well, I must say, I haven't encountered it that much. And we do, like for example in Pakistan, I mean there's always all kinds of small different and of course, especially when you talk about abortion, for example, what happens when we go to Africa, you can't mention the word abortion, that's what we hear, because if you mention abortion, everybody will freak out, nobody will feel comfortable anymore during the training, so we are thinking about all these other difficult words that, like, you know, so, but then when we're there, what happens is, well, we start talking about abortion, of course, because that's what we do, and then everybody's so relieved that finally somebody starts talking about abortion. So it's like, you know, most of the people have very basic similar realities. Some are poor, some are living in countries where, you know, but the basic reality of being encountering problems and I don't know, I think always the fundamental emotional exchange is very similar everywhere. And but that might be because we already learned how to cope with cultural differences. I don't know. It's never been actually. It was always nice. You have these exchanges about how do you do this, how do you do that. It's more of a curiosity about how everybody deals with their lives. And I mean, the difference is, of course, like we come, and we go again. They are there. They will stay. And that's something that I'm always very aware of. Like, that is why it's the local groups that are setting the boundaries and set the rules of the game. What we do is we push them and say, well, is this really true or is this self-censorship? What's going on? So what we can do is, because we are not from there, is we can question the things that they have in the boundaries that they have implemented on themselves. And that is something what happens all the time. Like, they say, you can't do this. And then, you know, we say, well, you know, but can we really do it? And then we try. And, like, for example, in Ecuador, when we were launching the hotline, I proposed to hang a banner from the Virgin of Quito, which is a big... and now everyone's, no, you can't do that. It's impossible. That we'll go to jail over it. And everybody was really nervous, but they got very excited about the idea as well. So, you know, it needs another night. And I said, well, you know, we have nothing else. What else can you propose? Well, this, but that, you know, that won't make the media. It doesn't make sense. So, and, you know, you're safer with us because now there's the foreign press and, you know, we'll help you and everything else. And so you can also help people gain confidence sometimes in crossing boundaries because, and nothing happened. And that's what happened. And the same in Pakistan. All the old organizations, if you give a press conference, you should never mention the word abortion. And we said, yeah, but then it doesn't make sense. Why would you give a press conference if you can talk about abortion? No, but this will create so much blah, blah, blah. And then one of the girls said, yeah, I'm going to talk about abortion. And she did. She was a Pakistani girl. And nothing happened. Like, people just were okay with it. And I think this internalized self-censorship is perhaps the most dangerous thing in this world. And so, and that is the same internalized censorship is when we go, you know, when we have a cold and we don't dare to think about what it means, but we immediately go to a doctor. It's, in a sense, also a kind of inhibition on, it's everything is about a questioning of what we can actually do and how much we can do. So this censorship is, to stimulate the courage, the do-it-yourself mentality to...
Perhaps you could add to your list of practices and identities your amazing skill in negotiating kind of media, talking with and using the media to further the work that you're trying to advocate for. Would you agree with that? And do you find it difficult to communicate with subtlety your arguments through media? Like, in other words, you had spoken at great length about how the ship is not just a ship, it's a catalyst. Is that something that you feel like you've been able to communicate?
No, I don't tell that to media. Are you crazy? The ship is there to do abortions, period. That's what, you know, that's what they're interested in. And of course, I mean... I have a very double feeling about the media. I think, you know, there's some things that I'm well aware of. The first, that the fact that, for example, the project succeeded because of the interest of the media before there was a project. Like, the first time there was media, there wasn't even an organization. There was just an idea, and that was already in the International Herald Tribune front page news. You know, I just said, okay, we're going to sell to Malta, and then Malta got upset. And then, so media is interesting, but why was the media interested? Because I was young, because I was a woman, because I know that within, I don't know, I seem to have a good media appearance. Like, somehow, some people do it well. It doesn't have to do with how you look, but it's just some people know the media catches up well on them, and others not, and I seem to have, and so these were the things, and it was a crazy idea. So, I was really afraid of the media, and of course, like, they write things that are incorrect. They are very sloppy. They are very, but it doesn't matter because what I learned in the end, it doesn't matter what they write as long as they write about it. And I saw it that I was being used in order to voice a certain issue. So I learned it's not about me. It's really not about me, my personal life. I needed to have a story, a personal story, because that's how the media works. They want to have a personal story. But I'm very happy now, this last year, that I haven't done any media because I don't feel this... internal need to be in the media. I find it stressful and disturbing sometimes. And And it's weird because it changes your, it changes other people's perceptions of you. Like, people know me from the media, and so the way they engage with me is not anymore as me, but as somebody who has, you know, who's known or well known or in the media or got awards, or, and I can feel shitty as I do. But there's somehow it, like, it's, it gives this kind of strange division between private and public life, which is sometimes upsetting. Yeah.
But to go back, I don't understand. So why? I mean, to be very naive about it, like, so why wouldn't you, when interviewed by a journalist, explain that the ship is a catalyst?
I do that. No. I mean, I tell that we can never help as many women as that need it. The ship can only be there for a certain time. So what it does is it raises awareness. Uh-huh. I do talk about that. But they are interested in, so how many women did you help?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we said, well, we can really just say how much, because, you know, it's not about numbers.
You mean they're interested in the outcome? Measurable outcome in a way, and you want to think more broadly about it.
That is what is the controversy. The controversy is how many women did you, what women, you, how many women did get an abortion on the ship? That is the news value. So, for example, when we were in Poland, you know, we, what was the news value? Because we never said that we were doing abortions, and so what they did, the customs, they counted all the pills before we left, and they counted them again when we came back. And then the news story was 5 abortion pills missing from the ship. You know, so it's like, yeah, I mean, so, yeah. And so, you know, you have really good journalists that are really interested in the background story and that go deeper, and research journalism. And I mean, it's wonderful to work with them, but most of the media is soundbite, quotes, quick. One article,
So do you have a kind of a plan for the next 10 years, or do you act more in an artistic way, like more ad hoc sort of way? Like, do you think strategically about where you want to be?
There have been, like, how it's been the last 10 years is, first of course, Women Waves was an enormous project. So that was project by project. So we knew we wanted to go to certain countries, and that could be happening 1 or 2 years later, depending on how quickly we could get the funding and things. But I think beyond that was really not very possible concerning resources and things. And then there was this idea for Women on Web. And so Women on Web was started, you know, all the different and all the problems that came with it had to be solved. And in the meantime, there were more campaigns for Women on Waves. So Women on Web is really like the long-term, real help thing. But like the hotline project came out of actually a field project in Ecuador, because we were planning to go there with the ship, because the hotlines are always part of the campaigns of the ship as well, because women have to call to make an appointment to come to the ship. And so we always had this big banner on the ship with a telephone number. And in Portugal, for example, that continued to function until abortion was legalized there. But it was not a separate project as such. And then when we wanted to do a campaign in Ecuador, we bought a ship in Costa Rica, and it had to be sailed over to Ecuador, and the first tropical storm hit, and our first ever bought ship landed on the beach. But the whole, like, that was like 8 weeks before we were supposed to do the campaign, so every, you know, we had booked already all the flights for everybody, like everything was already in place. And so the only thing that was left over was, okay, then we can do something with the hotline. And so this whole hotline project, actually, which have been very, very, very successful. There's now hotlines in Chile, in Peru, in Argentina, in Ecuador, in Pakistan, in Indonesia. And these are very, very successful projects. But they came about because of, this was like a solution to a field project. So I think that is another thing which is very important, to try to create, to shift your failures into something productive. And so, but that was never a strategy that, you know, was thought of before we actually did it. And then it became one of the main strategies at this moment for Women on Waves, and a very successful one.